Today's episode of the Sidious Mag Podcast on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network is brought to you by the Sidious Mag Newsletter. Sign up at sidiousmag.substack.com to get your weekly fix of all the latest news, commentary, and more from all around the running world, provided by yours truly. Every week, we're doing a giveaway, like some of our crew neck sweaters, our hoodies. I've implemented a crossword puzzle that's been a hit with some of the readers. The newsletter also lets you keep up with all of the podcasts and shows that we're releasing all across the Sidious Mag podcast family. It's once a week and keeps you in the know. It takes 2 seconds to sign up. It's sidiousmag.substack.com. You can also find the link in the show notes. So sign up today. All right, we made it. This is episode number 200, and I wanted to start off by thanking you all for listening. Whether you just stumbled across the show and this is your first time listening, or if you've been with us from the very start in 2017, when I started this podcast, I honestly didn't think it would become what it has become. I truly enjoy having these conversations with interesting people within the running community and bringing them to you while you're running, while you're working, while you're commuting, if that's still a thing, and whenever you're listening to this show. Even though we're facing a global pandemic and it's not getting any better right now, this has actually been the biggest year for the podcast. It's been the most episodes, the most listens, the most downloads. And whether it's because you're using this show as motivation, as entertainment, or as a distraction in these tough times, I just really wanted to thank you for sticking with me and the show. So if you're interested in supporting the podcast and the time that I take to not only produce this show, but any of the shows on the Sidious Mag Podcast Network, you know, I've included the link to the Patreon page where you can maybe toss a dollar or two. And it just, you know, helps us keep going. You know, if you want to sponsor the show in 2021, the email is in the show notes. Or you could do something as simple as just leaving a nice review on Apple Podcasts. Maybe let me know when you picked up the show, how it's been going, and what you want to see, I guess, going forward. I don't want to stop doing these. This has been a medium for storytelling that I've really, really grown to love. So here's to 200 more episodes, at least. My guest for today's episode is Molly Seidel. When I was thinking about who would be a good person to get on for this one, it occurred to me that I still haven't had Molly on. She's been on Dana's podcast. She's been on countless other running podcasts. But Molly and I go back to when she was at Notre Dame. And I was often there to cover indoor track meets at the Loftus Center, or I just happened to be at the same college football tailgate. So I kind of knew Molly before she became, you know, the four-time NCAA champion. But I always recognized that she had tremendous talent. She won the Foot Locker High School Cross Country Championships in 2011. And now she's one of the most popular U.S. distance runners after her runner-up finish at the U.S. Olympic Marathon Trials. She recently put together a personal best and ran 2:25:13 at the London Marathon for sixth place. But she's also like a fan favorite for things like running the fastest known 10K in a turkey costume, or clocking a 36-minute mile as part of the Sidious Mag Slow Mile Challenge that was started by David Melly a couple months ago. In this episode, we're going to touch on some of those things, but also we'll discuss her struggles with disordered eating and much more, including, actually, online dating. That's one of my favorite parts of the episode. So you may laugh, you may cry. Honestly, I think this is one of the best episodes yet, and I'm really glad because it's episode number 200. So without further ado, here is Molly Seidel. All right, guest number 200, long-awaited, Molly Seidel. I think this is the first time I've actually, like, said your last name correctly after years of, like, knowing you.
I know. I was about to just compliment you there for nailing it. I feel like at this point, it's about 50-50 whether people will get it right, so I appreciate it.
Throughout college, did people get it wrong, like, for all 4 years, or did
just
people find
constantly. constantly. Really? See, I personally don't mind that much. I just think it's kind of funny. And then especially when people ask, like, it's Seidel, right? And I'm like, no, definitely not. Like, but I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad now that FlowTrack, I think, has started finally changing how they say it. People have started to realize that it was wrong.
Yeah. So where are you right now in this weird year? Like, are you on a break post, like, fastest known turkey trot? Like, cause it's such a weird, like, you ran a marathon, but now it's like, I guess we're coming up on, there's still track meets going on in the first mm-hmm. week of December. Where are you with your season?
Yeah. So, cause I ran London beginning of October, and then I took some time after that to just chill, build back up very slowly. Doing the 10 mile last week and the FKT attempt within like 3 days of each other. That was kind of for fun. I've been doing workouts and stuff, just building back into it. And originally I'd actually considered doing some of these track meets, the sound running one, the 10K. And then just talking with John, my coach, a little bit more and realizing, like, I think my body just needed a little bit more time after London. It had been such a fast, hard buildup. And really not needing to push for anything right now. Just like wanted to be a little bit smarter with it. And just like, even especially mentally and physically after London, I just needed some time to recover a bit. So yeah, decided not to do that. I was like, hey, I've already made the team. I don't need to be pushing and doing that. So might as well just take the time and enjoy it a little bit.
So now that you've had, I guess, like maybe what, a month and a half or so to really, I guess, like process how London played out. What's your overall feel about that race and sort of like what, like report card grade would you give yourself?
Yeah. I think I'm actually happier with it now than I was right after. And I even kind of felt embarrassed afterwards saying that I wasn't like, I was obviously so happy to have gotten sixth, so happy to have gotten in a race. But truthfully, like going into the day, basically what happened, John and I had been talking, feeling like my fitness was pretty good. We were feeling really good going into it. And I'd been hoping that one of the pace groups was going to go out in like 220, 224 because, like a lot of the British runners were there. They kind of changed around the pace groups. So there was one group that was going to be going out at like 220 and one going out at 225 and talking
that's
with
a big
John.
Gap.
That's a huge gap. That is a lot of room there. And so, talking with John, knowing like, okay, like I am not ready to go out in that 220 group. And realistically, if I try and do that, I'm just going to bomb myself and I'm going to have a really bad time. So we decided, okay, let's go out with the 225 group, shoot for that, maybe can build in the second half, but like, let's be smart because the point of this marathon is to build strength, get in practice for Sapporo, not hopefully like destroy myself and finish feeling good. And like we've learned things and can go forward like strong off of this. So yeah, I felt like going out in 225, it definitely felt a lot more relaxed in the first half. And I finished kind of feeling like I had some juice left in the tank. And for me personally, that is like, I'm really hard on myself that if I don't finish a race feeling like I went to the well, I see it as like, oh, like you didn't try hard enough. Whereas John has like talked with me. He's like, no, like that's really good that you finished like feeling maybe that you had more to give rather than like you totally died. And so, yeah, I'm trying to look at this race as like a great, like learning opportunity and just like building towards the big goal, which is next summer.
What was sort of like your reaction? Cause I remember in like the days leading up to it, like Sarah Hall was asked like, oh, like what's your approach going to be? She's like, I'm going to go out in like 70. And did you hear that? And you're like, all right, have fun with that.
Oh yeah, definitely. I had kind of known what, like heard about what Sarah's training was going on before, knew that she was just going to be getting after it. And I was just like, cool. Like this is my second marathon. Like I was actually really nervous for this one just because Atlanta played to every single one of my strengths. It was super tactical. It was super hilly and the conditions were hard. And like, those are like my three, like when I hear those like ding, ding, ding. And London, we got the hard conditions with the rain and the wind, but it was so flat and so fast. And that's something that I personally really struggle with, those like really just like time trial type courses. So yeah, I knew like Sarah was just in a different like league of fitness and like mental race readiness than I was. And I think I just kind of took the approach of like, okay, like I need to go out and like do a strong showing, but I don't need to prove anything in this race. Like I had a little bit of a chip on my shoulder after the trials of getting quite a bit of criticism of like, oh, they should rechoose the team. Oh, this course wasn't similar to what they'll see in Sapporo. This is the wrong, quote unquote, wrong team that we have. And so I definitely felt like I had to prove something and just kind of realizing like, nah, you mad, bro? Like I made the team. I'm just going to go out and try and do what I'm going to do for the next year.
Was there any pressure in, I guess like that it kind of does answer like the question I was about to ask about, like already like having been on the Olympic team, like there's a little bit of added extra shine that you had going into this race as opposed to going into Atlanta where it was just sort of like, oh, she's the girl with the half marathon PR who hasn't run a marathon. So it was totally different this time around.
I think it was totally different, but in a way I think it helped that this was London rather than like a Chicago or New York, because I think when Americans show up to Chicago or New York, there's these huge expectations, or hell, like say it was Boston, everyone would be like, oh, you're the Bostonian, are you gonna like, and suddenly you're a big name now that you made the Olympic team. I think when you go over to these international ones, like when there's five women that have run under like 2:19, like they don't give a damn about some 2:27 marathoner that got a second place at this one race. And so it was nice taking the pressure off, because all of the press was on like Bridget Koskay, Eliud Kipchoge, like the big names in this race. And hell, a lot more of the press was on Sarah, because like realistically she'd run a hell of a lot faster than I had. So it was actually really nice for me being able to go into it and kind of feel like I didn't have as many eyes on me, because that stresses me out.
Oh yeah. I mean, just imagine if it was like Chicago, you would have, you know, sort of like the Notre Dame, like Illinois connection where, and just like in general, there would have been media appearances, sponsorship obligations. How weird was, I guess, the ultimate like bubble experience where it was just like, you're in and out. Like this was just a business trip.
Yeah, no, I like, I'm all for that. Like how I kind of usually do it with races is, yeah, you kind of go in like low key, like hell, like some of my first half marathons, I was literally like bird scootering to the start of the race. So like, I love that kind of like flying under the radar a little bit. Like I'll leave the media appearances to other people. And that's not to say that I don't enjoy doing that. Like, obviously I want to like pay back my sponsors for doing that, and like I did do quite a few things for like Morton or Saucony and all those guys, but at the end of the day, I like my mentality going into it is like, this is a business trip. Like I'm here to work, I'm here to do a job, I don't want to get caught up in all this other like all this other pomp and circumstance around it.
Right after you cross the finish line, there's a hot mic and it catches you saying that you really needed to go to the bathroom.
Minutes off her best. So brilliant run from Molly Side.
How long were you holding it in for?
I have to say, I definitely think that negatively impacted my race performance, because the problem was it was so cold. I physically could not go to the bathroom before that race. And so I stepped on the starting line already having to go to the bathroom and knowing that I was screwed. It was sorry if this is like TMI.
No, this is great.
But yeah, it got to the point about halfway through where I was just like, oh my God, I need to find a bathroom somewhere. But because the course was so closed off, like there were no porta potties along the course, we physically, like I couldn't even like duck under a fence to like go to the bathroom on the side. That is literally the only reason why, like, because I physically could not get out and there were people like guarding this secure area that we had. So like the last, like I would say like half to third of that race, I was just in like so badly focusing on how badly I had to go to the bathroom, and then just immediately finishing me like, I need to find a porta potty right now. So I definitely put too much like mental strain into that, but like it was bad. It was really bad. I totally understand like the whole like, because that's something you don't really have to deal with in a track 10K. When you're out there for 2.5 hours, it's just like, yeah, shit happens.
Literally, almost.
Almost. Shockingly close.
I, you know, kind of remember, you know, the breakaway in Atlanta comes at like mile like 19 with you and Alfina. And this is the moment where in the race, there's a lot of positive self-talk happening. And just, you know, reinforcing that, like, hey, you know, I belong here. I somehow still feel really good.
So because of this urge to go to the bathroom, how different was that self-talk in London?
The self-talk was a little bit different. It was more just don't poop your pants on international television. But despite that, it actually did help take a lot of the mental focus away from like my legs being tired or like how freaking cold I was, because it was so cold. Like I was considering like starting in a poncho, and before the race started, we all had our little pods, and each of the pods had a porta potty. So I went up and literally set up shop. It was like my little office inside the porta potty, like put down the little children's changing table, brought a chair into there, and then just turned on like oldies music. So I was like dancing to like Brandy by Looking Glass, trying to stay warm before the race because I was so, so freaking cold. And I called John, and it's like 2 a.m. his time. And I'm just like, John, I don't know if I can do this. And he was probably just like, oh God, like what have I done? Yeah. So it was definitely an experience. It was very different from Atlanta, but it worked out. It worked out. We got to the finish.
On this sort of note of like the self-talk and like the reinforcement that you give yourself, like how do you sort of like develop or practice that, you know, just not having to really face, you know, tough conditions every single time in practice, but what do you sort of like tell yourself on like hard workouts and training runs?
Mm-hmm. I think a big thing for me, because especially when I was coming off my surgery back for like when I was just starting up again in 2019 and everything was hard and I was like, I was struggling to get through workouts and stuff. And something that I kind of started telling myself was like, it doesn't have to be good. You just have to do it. And so like, I feel like I kind of started taking that mentality into my marathon training then as I build up for Atlanta, because there were so many workouts that I just like shat the bed on or like couldn't finish, or like it just became a matter of like, I just have to like finish this, and it doesn't have to be pretty. It doesn't have to be spectacular. This doesn't have to be like a flow track worthy workout. I just have to finish this, because the most important thing is like getting the whole thing done and mentally being able to not quit. And so I think a lot of that has just stayed with me of like, you just need to finish it. And so when I'm like, I don't know, 8 miles into like a 12 mile tempo or something, it's just, you're like, how the hell am I going to do this next 4 miles? And it's like, you just got to finish it. And I think that's even like in the marathon too. It's like, you just have to keep going. And at some point, like you have to not think about how far you have to go left. You have to not think about the fact that it's probably going to get faster. It's just like, I just have to like keep moving forward, like left foot, right foot.
Have you ever pulled the Olympian card where you're like, I can do this, I'm an Olympian in a workout?
I have actually done that, but in the sense of like on days where I'm really like being a pussy and like don't like want to quit, or even if it's like not that hard of a workout and I'm just like mentally like, I'm just not feeling this, I'm like, no, like you're an Olympian, you can get this done. Like even in Atlanta, it was like really funny, like as we were breaking away and it was starting to get really, really hard, I like had the mental thing of like, you've hurt so much worse than this in your life. Like you can handle another 6 miles of this. And so, nothing in this race can hurt more than what you've already been through.
I think we spoke maybe back in like April or something like that, right before like the Olympics were getting postponed. And there was that, that sort of like, I think you had pending Olympian in like your Instagram bio. Yeah. Now, I guess like months later, how do you sort of feel about sort of like that title? I know you've got like your ticket punch. You're going to be at the Olympics next year. And sort of like, have your feelings sort of changed at the level of optimism that comes with like the Olympics are going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely terrifying for a while of like the one, not knowing if we'd keep our spots, then two, is the Olympics even going to happen? And so like, I've changed it to Olympic marathon qualifier, just because somebody like, apparently like people thought the wording was weird. I'm like pending Olympians. They're like, wait, is it a question of whether or not you'll be on the team? So I just say that I was qualifier. I personally feel very strongly that until you've competed in the Olympics, you cannot call yourself an Olympian. So I'm not going to put that on there until after the race. But yeah, in terms of like just confidence that the race will happen, like it definitely has helped, just because it has like truthfully been a big source of stress And like, this has been the like one of the biggest goals of my life, to make an Olympic team. And now it's like, geez, like, of course, like I do it in the year where it's just like everything is thrown into question. But yeah, I think so much of it is, yeah, just trying to like, one, give myself the confidence that like, okay, you qualified for the team. You deserve this. You deserve to be here. It doesn't matter what people say. And then also like hedging myself of not getting too far ahead of myself of like, okay, yeah, nothing is certain in this world. Like, don't get your hopes up too high. So I kind of truthfully just take things a day at a time.
I love it. In sort of like the last year or so, and how things have really honestly like changed for you, was it's been almost a year since you went on Julia's Running on Own podcast and really opened up about, you know, the treatment that you underwent for disordered eating in 2016 and like your struggles with depression and anxiety. I want to touch on that conversation for just a sec, because the lead up to it, I'm curious about just the level of courage it took to make it happen and get it out there, because, you know, this could have been an Instagram caption that just ran really long, but I feel like there was something really powerful of, you know, the conversation, one, taking place with Julia, who's like a really close friend of yours. And yeah, I mean, so what was sort of like that lead up to it? Like,
yeah. So I think the lead up to it was, it wasn't any like conscious thing of me being like, I am ready to tell my story and whatnot. It's more, I never would have gone and just done like the Instagram post, like, let me talk about this, because one, that's not really my style. Two, I think part of it was just the sense of like, Julie is a very close friend of mine. We have talked, like, Julie has been one of the people that has helped me the most. Through all this, through the ups and downs, like through the last couple of years that I've been in Boston and still dealing with like relapsing and continuing to deal with mental health. When Julia asked me to go on the podcast, I knew that we would probably like touch on some of that stuff, just because I was very open with my friends about what I had been through. Most of the people that I was close to knew that I had been through this. I just had never talked about it in an extremely public manner. And so I was like, okay, yeah, we'll probably end up like talking about this a little bit. I don't know how deeply we'll go into it. And then once I got onto the pod, and just a combination of like feeling very comfortable with Julia and just her way of, I don't know, making, like, it's hard to explain, but like, I think I felt so much stigma over what I've gone through, and that was a big reason for not wanting to speak about it publicly, and just feeling very comfortable in the moment and knowing like, okay, like this is someone who I can be totally open with, and I'm kind of ready to talk about it now. It was just like, it almost occurred in the moment of just like, yeah, I'm ready to do this now, not realizing how much momentum it would take on afterwards. And so like, I'm so happy I did it. Like, I'm glad that I decided to do it in the moment, and there wouldn't have been anyone else that I would have done it with other than Julia. I think it's been hard afterwards, especially after the trials then, because people, once you speak out about it once, are a lot more quick to ask questions about it. And specifically, like, some people who I don't know well ask way too in-depth questions about it. And so it's like, I have no problem talking about it with like people that I know and stuff, but it's like, I don't want to get down like into the weeds with someone I just met, like, and going quickly from like, I don't know, it's hard to explain. And like, I struggle with this sometimes, being labeled as like the eating disorder runner, because it's like, no, this is like this is some shit that I went through. I still deal with it, but it's like, I don't want this to define me fully. And like, when someone just wants to like get deep in the weeds about bulimia, I'm like, no, I'm just not going to talk about this. Like, I'm sorry. This isn't helpful to anyone.
It's interesting, because I want to stay on the topic just for a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Because I've known you since you were at Notre Dame. And it's funny, because I guess like I would pop in sort of as just kind of like, oh, it's the Flotrek guy who, you know, happens to be here for the Mayo Invite or this cross country meet, or just, you know, random football games. Like, I was at Notre Dame often, and I recently got together with our friends Mike Clevenger and Martin Grady, and I asked them sort of, because you came up in conversation at one point, how aware were they sort of what was going on with you? Because in the ESPN piece, I think that you wrote, you did say something about like how you know, some of the people at Notre Dame from 2012 to 2016 knew what was going on. And for them, I think they could sense something was up, but it was never like sort of like explicitly shared. And I'm sure, like, you know, part of it too is like, is it the guys team and that kind of stuff. And you were probably much closer to the women's team. But in general, the way I remember you from like those Notre Dame years was just sort of like really talented, always happy. So masking that, was it tough? I'm trying to think.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's always a sense of like, you have this, like, I don't know, outward persona that you have, and like everything has to seem okay all the time. And I don't know if that's just like a runner thing, if that's a girl thing or whatnot, but it's like, yeah, even when I was like really struggling, or like, I would remember like times where it's like, you're going up and like, I don't know, like, yeah, just, I guess, really tough memories of like going and even being at like team functions. And I'm like, in the, like, I pop to the bathroom for like 5 to 10 minutes and make myself throw up. And then you have to like come back out and you're just like totally fine again. And nobody knows. And not, I think that was part of my problem in college, of I wasn't reaching out and I wasn't vocal enough about how much I was struggling. So then, even in the times when my body looked healthier than it did at the end of my college career, when I was still struggling just as much, and everyone's like, oh, but you're happy all the time. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, yeah, it's one thing when I'm happy at team functions, but that's not necessarily what I'm really going through. And so, yeah, it's hard. I think I've become a little bit better now with like being able to be real and being just like, yeah, I'm not okay. Like hell, that's why I'm not doing like some of these 10K races at the end of the year. Cause like, I was just like, you know what? I'm like, I need some time right now. I'm not mentally where I need to be. And I could see myself like focusing too much on the externals and not on myself, which is exactly what I did at ND. It was just always, I need to hold it together for this next race. I just need to hold it together and like put on the best show and totally like blank out the internal parts of me that weren't doing okay. So yeah, I think it's hard. I feel like I'm so mixed about my time in college, because in certain ways it was like, it was so fun. I feel like who I am today is so much because of my time at ND, but it was really hard and I did really struggle, and I don't think I'd ever want to go back and do it again. But like, I am really grateful for the time that I had there. And like, how I'm going back to ND in a couple of weeks, and it's like, I love getting to go back. Like, it's really fun. I love getting to, yeah, be all up in it again. But yeah, there were a lot of really tough times there. Sorry if that answer was kind of all over the place. I feel like I'm still kind of figuring out like how I feel about my college career.
No, totally. I mean, I get it. And the culture of the team is something that also maybe like, I think like there've been multiple coaching switches, I think, at this point, where hopefully like it's sort of like changed or improved. One thing that stood out to me about like what you kind of just said before was that, you know, there's this label that sometimes gets thrown on people where it's like, oh, the eating disorder runner or the person who overcame the eating disorder. In this sort of year that you've had, what is, you know, sort of like that Molly the blank that you feel like you've tried to like kind of craft for yourself? Some people might know you as like Molly, you know, the
personal brand, you would say. Yeah. No, Christ, I hate that phrasing. Like that idea that on Instagram you have to be like one thing. Yeah, I guess I don't know. I'm trying to think of like, in terms of like something that would define me as a runner, because I feel like I get it from people all the time that they say, oh, you're fairly unconventional for a pro runner. I'm like, thank you. But I guess like, I do appreciate that, just because I feel like I do approach things in pro running a little bit differently than the quote unquote, like normal. Like, I'm never going to be a Shalane Flanagan. I don't think it's healthy necessarily for me to be the hyper-focused, like one track mind. Like everyone asks me afterwards, like, oh, are you going to join Bowerman now? I'm like, I personally don't think I would do well on a team like that. I think that kind of structure works really well for people. I personally thrive off a little bit more like loosey-goosey, and like being able to have another life outside of pro running, which is why I love being in Boston. I love living with my sister out here. I love having friends that aren't pro runners. And I love having John as my coach, because he gives me so much independence to do that. So yeah, Yeah, maybe I'll do that. Molly, the unconventional pro.
I like that. And it's so evident in just like all the different things that you do. It's like the snow mile challenge that we just threw out there. You just decided to go do it one day. People loved it. It's, you know, running in the turkey costume. So sort
well,
of
even
like,
so when we were just down, so I went down for Kira Diamato's 10 miler. I had gone down with the intention of like, oh, maybe I can like pace her and like help her out. I lost contact with her in the first 800 meters. I probably should have done more than 3 workouts before that. But afterwards I was cooling down with M Durgan and she's like, so like, did you like make any money coming to this? I'm like, oh, hell no. Like I actually paid my own way down. Like it was kind of fun. She's like, then why are you doing this? I'm like, why the hell do I do anything? Just because I wanted to. And it seemed like it'd be fun. Like, I feel like that is kind of my approach. Like that was my approach going into the trials. Like I didn't expect to make the team. It just seemed like it'd be fun.
It's awesome. Your Instagram DMs must just be like a flurry of just different things. It could be like some super like people reacting to something hilarious that you did. But then there's also like the component to it where it's like people are finding your story at, you know, many different points in time. And there's people sometimes seeking advice. And I know how you said that, like when people want to get like extremely sort of deep and you don't know them, like it could be tough figuring out what to say, but and it's hard to give like sort of like the cookie cutter cut and paste to the same, you know, I don't know, like a random high school girl who reaches out about something she's struggling with. But so how do you handle sort of that stuff?
Yeah. One thing I feel bad about in DMs is just I miss probably 80% of them. And so this is to anyone who has sent me a DM and I haven't responded. It legitimately is just because like I'm really bad with responding to DMs and there's a lot of them. But the ones that I do get to, yeah, it varies between like the super fun people responding to like just the goofy shit that I'm doing. The very deep, intense, emotional ones of like, I listened to this podcast, I read your story. Like it really resonated with me. And those, like, I'll usually respond like, I'm so glad it resonated, like, and try to connect with the person on some level. The hardest ones for me, especially, are people who are currently struggling that are reaching out for advice, because a lot of them center themselves in the same manner of like, my doctor, my coach, my whatever is telling me that I have a problem or that I need to do this. You have overcome this and are still running. And what should I do? I want your advice rather than what my doctor or coach or somebody is telling me. And those are really hard because it's like, no, like I, like my experience is very individual. And I can't speak, like, I never wanted to say like, I am not a mental health professional. I am not a doctor. I am like a level 1 USATF coach. Like I'm not your coach. You need to listen to the people that are close to you because they know your conditions better than anyone. And like, ultimately that's what helped me get better, is like listening to the people around me that were willing to help. So I think that's the hard thing when people are like, oh, like my coach wants me to gain 15 pounds. You didn't have to do that. And I'm like, well, actually I did. But, yeah, I think they want a quick and easy answer. Or what's the one food that will stop me getting stress fractures? I'm like, I don't know, any food, just more of it. So yeah, it's hard because all I have is my own experience. I'm not an expert on eating disorders. I'm not an expert on mental health. And I want to help, but at a certain point I have to be like, I'm not equipped to be able to do this.
The Molly in 2016 who, you know, found help, went into, you know, the treatment program, could she have foreseen just sort of like this outcome of what has sort of like happened over the last 4 years where people are like sort of reaching out and not?
Yeah, no, I could not have believed it, just because at that time, like being in the Ready Clinic and like really confronting the very real possibility of like not even not being able to run professionally, just not ever being able to run again. Like my bone density was so low. My weight was so low. I was just really mentally in such a horrible place. It was just like, how do I keep going from like day to day? And a lot of it is just like when you're going through hell, you just keep going. Like you just have to, it's kind of like, yeah, in a marathon, you just focus on that next step. And you can't have that like forethought of like, okay, what do I do 4 years from now? It's just, what do I do for the next 2 hours to get through like the hell that I'm living through right now? And And it was really hard, but I am very grateful that I have, like, I'm very close with my family and they fully supported me through all this. Like, I had a great therapist, like my college coach Sparks fully supported this and like was so willing to like let me get help. And so I think I didn't even, the only thing that I knew at that time was like, I was doing all this because I knew that I needed to be healthy enough to like keep living and like that I wanted to keep running and that I wanted to get back to running at some point in whatever capacity that was. And I feel like I use that as kind of like a motivation of like, if you don't get your shit together, you're never going to run again. So it's like, you better gain like 15 pounds and really do the work in therapy to like get through this. Otherwise you're going to blow it. And yeah. I think my therapist kept telling me too, like, you don't have to like keep running. Like, you don't have to keep doing this. And I just kept coming back like, but I want to, like, this is the only thing I've ever dreamed of doing. And like, I want to do this so bad. So yeah, I'm frankly amazed at what has happened over the last 4 years. I never could have believed this is where I'd end up from 2016 Molly.
I was in Atlanta. I interviewed your parents just outside, like, sort of the tent. And your mom showed me, you know, the photo of what you wrote when you were in, I think it was, like, grade school or whatever it was. Fourth grade, saying you wanted to compete at the Olympics. It sounds like that never really went away, because I'm trying to think of, like, you know, being a kid, I maybe wanted to play for the New York Yankees someday or something like that. Or some people grow up wanting to be an astronaut and then it switches to a firefighter like 2 years later. But for you, this dream kind of was pretty constant, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really funny because I feel like I've been so blessed in the sense that the thing, like, I feel like there's things that like you truly love and things that you're good at. And like in the Venn diagram of those things, the one thing that I truly love more than anything and the one thing that I truly am good at like just happen to be the same thing. And I'm so lucky to have that, because I feel like that is fairly rare in life to get those sort of things. Like, there, even if I like, I am just so passionate about running, like at the end of the day, like it's the one thing that I truly, truly love. And I love getting to go out and do this every day regardless of how freaking miserable the weather in Boston is sometimes. And so it's like, yeah, even from a young age, I knew that like running was the one thing that I wanted to do, even before I knew how good I could be at it. Like, I don't think I realized until high school, really, like, oh, like you can actually be really good at it. I think when I was in fourth grade and writing that down, it was just like, oh, when you like sports and if you're like mildly okay at it, like Olympics, that's like the top goal of any sport. And so it was that. It wasn't like any idea in fourth grade of like, I am going to be an elite athlete. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, this is where you go if you want to do sports things. So yeah, I think I just kind of like, I'm so grateful that I get to do the thing that I love most in the world every single day.
Put me in your shoes to feel this sort of joy. I know sometimes like I'll go out for a run and I'm like, all right, I just want to get this done, 30 minutes and that's it. But it sounds to me, and I'm sure to other people probably listening, that like if you got those 30 minutes, you're going to be on this next level high that I sometimes maybe don't feel every single time. Is it really like that for you most runs?
I would say like there are definitely the runs that like really suck. Like, that's not to say that my body doesn't hurt like hell sometimes. But no, I think it's just a sense of like, and I don't know how much of this has to do with like my OCD or whatnot. Just like, there are very few times in my day when I feel like my body and my mind like finally sync up. Like, I feel like my brain sometimes is going like 15 times faster than the rest of my body, just like spiraling thoughts. And since I was pretty young, realizing like, oh, the only time that I feel like my brain finally fits inside my body is when I'm running. Like, everything just kind of makes sense. So I wouldn't say it's necessarily like that runner's high of just being like, oh my god, the world is great. Like there are runs where that happens and I'm just like, this is awesome. But there are definitely the runs where like it kind of sucks. Like last night, it was like steady 35 mile an hour winds and like gusting 60, and it was just kind of like horrible weather out and it didn't feel good. But I don't know. I guess it's just this sense of like knowing that this is what my body was like kind of meant to do. And like, even today, like in the workout, like it just kind of like, I don't know. I guess like the best way for me to say it is that like the world makes sense when I'm running. And I just love it. It doesn't, I don't know. Sometimes running doesn't love me back. And it's very hard in the times where, like, in the 6 months when I couldn't run, that was probably one of the hardest times of my life too, of just like not getting to do this one thing that I love more than anything. But yeah, I don't know. It's really hard to explain. And I think a lot of people think I'm psycho, and I'm like, no, I legitimately, like, I want to run 2 times a day every single day because I just like love doing this. So yeah, it's difficult to explain, and I'm sorry I can't put it more eloquently than that.
No, it's totally good. I'm curious how you express this on a Hinge profile.
Oh God. I try to like bury the lead on just how psycho of a runner I am on any sort of dating app, just because I feel like that scares away a lot of people. Where when you try to like express how passionate you are about one thing, like if you replaced running with like any other thing in the world, they'd be like, oh my God, you huge nerd. Luckily running is like fairly acceptable. But like if I replace like running with Star Wars, I'm like, I spend all day just thinking about Star Wars. I like, yeah.
How many running photos are we talking?
Oh no, I actually don't put any running photos on my Hinge because the problem that I've now run into in Boston is amongst the running community, I'm fairly well recognized, and so I try to hide that on my Hinge profile.
Is there at least like a 2 truths and a lie, like one of them says like I finished second in the Olympic trials, or is this identity totally a secret?
No. When the only photo of me running that I have up on dating apps is like, it's a photo of me at the Stanford invite in college with 2 of my friends like after the race, so it like it looks like, oh, maybe she ran in college and doesn't anymore. Who knows?
And she's got friends, because that's important to show
and, off. And she's got friends. Yeah, never. Oh, huge red flag. Huge red flag on dating profiles when it's only solo photos. Oof. No, no, no. No, 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 no.
I ran into that for a while.
Yeah, because you don't have friends. Ooh, sorry. Ooh,
yeah, exactly.
No, but the big thing is then too, if you put a bunch of running stuff up on your profile, you always get the guys that are like, oh, you're a runner? We should race. I'm like, ah, never talk to me again, please.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the fun of dating online.
So wait, I think I saw somewhere that you found a, like you tried to find a pacer for your workout or something?
No. Okay. That has been blown out of proportion. The story is so Craig Hunt is a friend of mine from Flagstaff who had paced me in the past. I was going back out to Flag, and just on a whim, I set my dating profile to Flagstaff location, and we matched. Craig, like we knew each other. This is like a thing of like, oh, friends matching. Ha ha ha. Craig, in my defense, put his marathon PR up in his profile. And so of course I go, Craig, like, so can you pace me while I'm out in Flag again? Yes. Then in that turn into, oh, Molly said I'll find pacers on Hinge. In my defense, we knew each other beforehand and he put his marathon PR up there. That's on him.
I think one of the most embarrassing things I'll confess to is I think at one point when I first got on like one of these dating apps, I set my radius to something like 13 or 15 miles. And then I was like, I think in the bio, which is the nerdiest thing I could probably have put, it was like, I set my radius to a runnable distance. And then like when someone asks like, oh, how far did you set it to? I'm like 15 miles or something like that, like a comfortable distance. I'll get there in like, you know, an hour and a half or something.
Oh my God. You know what was the craziest one that I heard? The opposite of that. I recently met someone that they live in Montana and they set their profile to New York to find like people to date, but then we're fully open with the fact like, oh yeah, I live halfway across the country, which just seems wild to me.
Well, there was that whole thing where people were setting their location to battleground states and then trying to convince, asking people that they matched with if they were going to vote or not. And
no. If they said
yes, this has actually happened. There's like a whole, I'll send you the article.
Are you serious?
They asked them if they were going to vote. And if they said no, then they tried to convince them to. And if they, you know, said for Trump, then like they'd either unmatched or tried to sway them from doing it. But
makes me so frustrated is that dating apps are already so ungodly frustrating. And like during the election season, you're already getting so many stupid spam texts and everything. If I went on a dating app, matched with a cute guy and was so excited only to be told again, like, oh, are you going to vote? I would be pissed. That is just dirty. That's dirty pool right there.
Well, then the other component is, yeah, you could say, you know, you said, yes, I voted. And, you know, here was my plan or all that kind of stuff. I think they asked people, like, what is their voting plan if they hadn't voted, which is just ridiculous. Yeah, it's like, oh, it's like, are you going to vote by mail? No, it was just, this is a campaign that took off. It was, I think it was called Hinge Save America.
Oh, Christ.
Just look up the hashtag. It was crazy. But then, you know, ultimately you do feel bad for people who somewhat do start to have a crush with the match, and then they just find out they were just being used as a number to vote. But I thought it was, yeah, it was interesting.
I'm so not about that. That if someone matches with me on Hinge and asks me anything about voting, that's an immediate report that.
All right, back to
sort of running. Yeah, sorry that now we've talked about like online dating for the last 10 minutes.
I think people enjoy this kind of stuff. Like, well, like with the episode that I did with Kira D'Amato, we talked about Survivor for 10 minutes, and actually, like, people seem to have enjoyed it. So, this is that version of that.
So this is where we lead into just talking about the Mandalorian for the next.
Back to running. August 7th. Have you allowed yourself to dream of what that looks like?
Oh, I think I've been thinking more about what the potential situation in terms of a bubble and travel to Tokyo will be, because we've heard a few contingencies of what to maybe expect. A lot are depending on whether or not there's a functioning vaccine and the level of safety the Japanese want to take with this. So I think it varies from, I probably will not be allowed to see the opening and closing ceremonies, and we will be in a bubble type situation, which I personally am like, I'm fine with that. I'm there to race. I'm there to go do my job. Obviously I would love to be able to have spectators there. I would love to have my family there. I would love to see the opening and closing ceremonies. Realistically, we're probably going to be in Sapporo the whole time. And so that's just what it's going to be.
Yeah, that's such a shame. Yeah, because it takes away like being able to go see like the USA basketball games and that kind of stuff. Like, it's just not going to be a thing, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, but I don't think we'd be able to do that regardless, because we're not going to be in Tokyo. We're going to be in Sapporo. Like, I won't be in the Olympic Village. So, yeah, it's kind of like, it's frustrating, but I mean, like, yeah, it's still the Olympics. Like, that's the thing. At the end of the day, like, I am there to race and to get a job done, so I'll look at it as a bonus if I get any of those other things, but like, as long as I get to run 26.2 miles through Sapporo, like, that's it. John and I have been talking a little bit about what like the course might be like, the heat, stuff like that, but truthfully it's fairly far off right now, so we've kind of been thinking more about like, okay, what do we do over the next I guess what is it now, 8-9 months now to prepare for those kinds of conditions, and then whatever happens on race day happens.
Do you feel like you're the type who will get crazy and like run with like garbage bags to simulate like the humidity, like dress and garbage and that kind of stuff?
Chris, you have met me. Do I seem like that kind of person? No. We've talked about like different locations to go to for humidity. Like, hell, if it comes to it, I'm just going to like train in Wisconsin for the summer, because like Wisconsin gets pretty rough right around like July or so. But yeah, I don't know. Well, like, maybe I'll do some sort of heat training. But yeah, for the most part, like, I don't overthink it really.
That sort of bubble setup where you were, you know, on like a closed premises for I don't remember how many days you ended up being there.
It's about a week.
Yeah. But if hypothetically, like Tokyo said, you're going to have to do that for like 2 weeks, like as soon as you get in, you think that would do anything sort of like to your training? It's the taper part of it, right?
Yeah, I think for the week before the race in London, it definitely wasn't the best situation, but like, it was fine. I did my final workout on the treadmill. It was a little bit hard having it so restricted in the training area. So I think if it was 2 weeks, it would be a little bit more difficult. Just because like 2 weeks before, I'm still doing like mileage. I mean, I'm still running like 100 miles a week or so that week. But no, I think with so many things like this, like, you just find a way. Like, I think so many people get caught up of like, oh, I can't do things exactly how I need to, how I want to. And it's like, you just make it work how best it's going to be given the conditions. And so I try not to get too wrapped up in that. So like, whatever they say the conditions are going to be, we'll find a way to make it work.
Yeah, it just leads to like really weird like Strava segments where you're just like running in circles like 50
exactly.
times.
Exactly.
All right, final questions I ask every guest. Number mm-hmm. one, what's the meanest thing you've read about yourself on letsrun.com?
Oh, God. I don't know if I want to say some of those things because a lot of them are eating disorder related. But, oh, I'm trying to think of what like the worst thing I would have read on Let's Run. I don't know. I might need to pass on that one because a lot of those are like fairly negative eating disorder yeah. ones and aren't like fun right. mean comments.
I know I kind of like have felt that maybe, and now this is after 200 episodes, I should adjust the question to be more about like, what's the funniest thing you read about yourself on letsrun.com? Because like when I say mean, some people like do say like, well, there's some like super hurtful things. Like I think about like when Mary Kane was on this podcast, like she talked about some of the really harmful things that have been said on there. So I think I might have to adjust after 200 episodes. Although like mean does sometimes lead to some funny answers.
Wait, no, there were definitely a couple ones that were like slightly throwing shade before the trials or like Molly Seidel just like hopes she finishes the Atlanta Marathon. I was like, damn straight, I am hoping that I'll finish the Atlanta Marathon. Like
that's a good one. Funniest drug testing story that you have?
Oh, the funniest drug testing story. It's actually been my only like out of competition drug testing that I've had during quarantine. So preface to this, this was probably July in Boston. We had had nobody in our apartment so far just because Boston had been in total lockdown. I had gone out for a run in mid-afternoon, which I usually didn't do. And we are going to be flying to Wisconsin the next day for July 4th. I show up to the door knowing, okay, I've got to do laundry. I've got to pack. I've got to get my shit together because we're leaving first thing tomorrow morning. There are two USADA drug testers on my doorstep of the apartment. I'm like, oh, damn it. Like, I have so much to get done. Let's just bang this out and go. They're like, no, because you've just been running, we have to wait 2 hours to do your blood passport. Like, we can't take it right away. We can do like the pee in the cup, but we have to wait. So I had two USADA drug testers in my apartment for 2 hours, and they have to follow you and watch you. You can't leave their line of sight. So they would follow me down to the laundry room. I'd do my laundry, come back up. After a while, it was getting like really awkward. I was like, do you want me to like put on Netflix for you guys? So I had two USADA drug testers watching Great British Bake Off in my apartment. Then I was like, can I get you guys like a drink or something? And they were like, we're not allowed to drink alcohol while we're here. I'm like, I can make you coffee. Like, it didn't have to be alcohol. But yeah, so that was probably one of the weirder experiences that I've had, but they were both very nice. It was just fun chilling with them.
Did you get it done like after the 2 hours? Like,
yeah,
just,
like, after, like literally on the dot 2 hours, the phlebotomist was like, boom, in, go. Yeah, because they were probably so ready to get home. Like, they don't want to be sitting in some random girl's apartment for 2 hours.
Yeah, well, at least like you made it sound like it was easy on them. There's people who've said, you know, it's taken them a while and like they've had to watch, you know, Jeopardy or whatever it is on a couch with the drug testers, but mm-hmm. sounds like it went super smooth. All right. If you could go on a run anywhere in the world with anyone from history, they don't have to be a runner and they don't have to be a real person. Where would you go on a run and who would it be with?
Okay, so wait, we're just conferring like running ability on any person from history.
Yeah,
anywhere
like,
in the world.
Yeah, we're just going on a nice little conversational easy run.
Ooh. A conversational easy run with anyone from history. I feel like this could be just like wild. I feel like it would be super fun to just do like some just like crazy figure from history, like Cleopatra or someone, just like around Egypt and just like bang out like mile repeats with Cleopatra and then just hang with her afterwards. I'm trying to think if there's any like, actually one big running hero that I have, this wouldn't need to like confer running ability onto here, but Greta White, like won New York 9 times. I believe she died of cancer several years ago, but she's just a huge running hero of mine. I hope I'm saying her name correctly. I know, I don't know if it's pronounced how it's spelled. But yeah, that would be a pretty cool person to go on a run with.
Where would the run be?
Ooh, I believe she's from Norway. So I feel like Norway in the summer would be really cool. Do it at like midnight when it's still like sunny out.
I'm sure people will be curious. What's your favorite running spot in Boston and then your favorite running spot in Wisconsin?
My favorite running spot. I feel like I've got a lot of favorite running spots in Boston. But I mean, the river is just like such a go-to. I know people get bored of doing the river who live here in Boston. I will never get sick of doing it, especially at night. Like it's been getting dark really early. And so a lot of my doubles are in the dark, and there's just something about coming over the Longfellow Bridge and you just look out over across the whole city. Cause mm-hmm. I live in Cambridge now. So I'm right across the river. And you just look at it and I don't know. I love it. I love just like, I love running in the city. I love everything about it. It's so pretty. You're just surrounded by so much energy all the time. So yeah, River Loop in Boston on the Charles. In Wisconsin, we have a park right by our house called the Shota Park. And that's still like one of my favorite places on earth to go run. I grew up running there. I have run thousands of miles in that park and it never gets old. The listeners would be like, damn, this girl just like runs loops all the time.
Do you have the Strava record for the Temple Loop in Boston or no?
No, my sister does.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is there any temptation for you to take it?
No. I've actually discussed this with some people. I think it's real, like, it's funny because like some of the New Balance girls are saying like, oh, like if we went out and actually time trialed it, like we could totally take that record. And I think that kind of defeats the fun of it because like, everybody knows, like, yes, if a pro runner fully went out and just like hauled ass on like any of these segments, it's our job. We could realistically get these, like, but I think it makes it a lot more fun when it is a community thing of like mm-hmm. the community runners are on Boston. It makes it accessible for people to go after it. Like if El Purrier goes and just balls out on the Temple Loop, nobody's going to ever try and go after that again.
Right.
Whereas like if Izzy Seidel does it and somebody like realistically might be like, oh, like, yeah, maybe I may like, I'm going to have to still ball out to try and do it, but like I can still try and go after that. Like, I think it makes it a more fun community thing.
That's why like the marathon course, so like Fobble has a ton of the records where it's like, oh, mm-hmm. some of these are just going to be untouchable. It, for, I guess like Strava purposes, is there like a segment or anything that you really like want to set your sights on and take someday?
I feel like, yeah, anything along the Boston, like major marathon courses would be pretty cool. Especially the ones that go like directly through the streets that you can't normally run because yeah. they're functioning streets. The one Strava segment, I will admit that I did go after in Flagstaff, there is a segment from the bottom of the Mesa to the top that goes to the house of the guy that owns Pizzicletta. And if you hit that segment, you get free pizza for doing it. And so I hate to admit it, but I did wear Endorphin Pros and specifically go after that segment. And I did get free pizza and it was worth it.
That's awesome. That's great. Final one has nothing to do with running. It's you get 25 shots from half court. If you make it, you win $25 million. If you don't make any of the 25 shots, you go to jail for 25 years. Would you attempt the shots?
No, I'm so bad at basketball. Like literally, I played basketball in middle school and my coach literally told me not to shoot the basketball. So I'm not even taking that chance. I'm fine. I'm fine knowing that I'm not having that money. It's not worth it.
Same. And it's definitely the smarter answer. All right, Molly. So do you have anything coming up? Like, or do you want to plug anything at the very end of this? Like, it seems like
no,
you're just
I wish I had right? more events to plug. No, truthfully, like I did like my kind of two fundraisers. We're just like going to hammer training for a while, get in some good volume. Yeah. Just here in Boston, drinking beer with my friends, hanging out, trying to enjoy Christmas a little bit, staying safe with COVID, getting my two tests a week. But yeah, yeah, I wish I had something more exciting to say that I was doing. Probably not. I might do a half marathon in January, but I feel like that's pretty far off.
Would you still do the track trials or are you kind of brushing that off?
Yeah, I think I still kind of want to do it. Like, I feel like that would be fun. I'm going to get my ass handed to me, but like in a fun way. And we've got to go out there anyway for our team processing. So I figure if USATF is paying for my ticket out there, I might as well run the race. So yeah, we'll see. I've got to get a qualifier first. I have not finished a track 10K in quite a while.
Oh, that's right. I forgot.
Yeah. Dropped out of that one this summer. Oh, fun times.
All right, Molly. Well, thanks again for being guest number 200 on this show. I appreciate it. And finally, we were able to get this done.
Yeah. No, thanks for having me. This was very fun.
That does it. Episode number 200 is now in the books. Thanks to Molly for taking the time to chat. That conversation had it all. And if you enjoyed it, leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts. Who do you want to see in the next 200 episodes? What have you thought of the first 200? Who has been your favorite? Let me know. And I guess you can also do so if you match with me on Hinge. That was my personal favorite part of the conversation. Again, if you want to back the podcast as a sponsor in 2021, my email is included in the show notes. You can also support us on Patreon if you like our work as an entire podcast network. Thanks again for your continued support. I've been your host, Chris Chavez, wishing you some happy and healthy running. Subscribe to the Sidious Mag newsletter. Stay safe, and legs are feeling good.